Perspectives on everything from major news stories to hidden and suppressed pieces of history. RedIceCreations.com is the website for more radio, and of course we have news from around the world as well. From Colorado, Dr. Eric Karlström is a professor of geography at California State University. In addition to teaching physical and environmental geography courses, he has also taught courses cross-listed with the geology department and an honors course called State of the World, the environmental perspective. He returns to Red Ice to discuss how weather warfare, creative destruction, mind control, and political agendas overlap. We'll discuss the hypothesis that superstorms are part of what he calls cyclical collapse. It's a strategy of the global elite. They are targeting the US and other countries, and this explains Hurricane Katrina, 9/11, the super tornadoes of Joplin, Missouri, and now Sandy, among others. We'll talk about creative destruction as a means for the elite to gain political, economic, and resource control. Right, welcome back to the program, Eric. Good to talk to you again. Thank you for coming on. How have you been since we talked last June?
Well, very well, thank you. Keeping busy, and I'm sure you have as well, huh?
Oh, sure, for sure. There's so much going on, difficult to keep track of everything, and it's just kind of difficult to know what to focus on, considering how many aspects and how many fronts one can focus on and look at these days as well. So obviously what we're going to do here today is to look at the geoengineering aspect. We're going to talk about Sandy specifically and this Frankenstorm, if this is a new type of storm and if it's been manipulated basically into what it turned out to be. But why don't we begin and just talk about the reality of geoengineering and weather modification first of all, because you have to explain to people, of course, that that's a possibility before you can even convince them that something like this could happen. So why don't we begin with the reality of geoengineering and all these weather modification programs that have been running now since the 50s, Eric?
Yeah. Henrik, it's great to be on your show again and have a chance to talk about these things because they're so important and they're so poorly understood and poorly known. I spent 30 years as a physical geography professor at three different universities, and just in the last several years, well, since 9/11, I've been reading outside of my field very strenuously and learning. And the kind of things that we're going to talk about tonight, or it's tonight for you, today for me in Colorado,
all right.
Are the kinds of things you don't learn in college, and you really have to dig. You're certainly not going to pick it up on the media. I've been working on a four-part series on the New World Religion the last year. I've been stalled out on part five, which is on mind control. And I know this sounds a little out of the initial question, but it's not. I would like to begin by saying that over the past 70 years or so, 60 or 70 years, probably longer, various governments, including United States, England, Soviet Union, etc., have done an enormous amount of very, very, very secret high-tech research. And the areas overlap. One of them is weather control, environmental warfare, also called geoengineering. It uses Tesla technology, which was, some people will be familiar with the name Nikola Tesla, probably one of the greatest geniuses who's lived in the past several centuries anyway. And it overlaps with directed energy weapons, electronic warfare, and free energy, also going back to Tesla. And these overlap also with mind control and what we can call psychotronic weapons, which have been all of these have been the subject of intense, highly secret research by governments, the ones that I named, I think, principally. And it would involve the very, very top academic institutions, hospitals, research labs, etc. So there's an entire series of technologies that the military has available, which is unknown to the public. I would say the military is probably conservatively 60 or 70 years ahead of what the public understands. So the questions that I'm asking tonight, what I would like to discuss is it possible that Superstorm Sandy is in fact Frankenstorm Sandy, that it was created by humans, as were other, or steered, or juiced up and made to be larger and then directed to a particular target city. I think we have precedents in the past. I think Hurricane Katrina certainly also fit this description, which is similar in more than one way, because these two hurricanes slammed into first a very poor metropolitan area comprised mostly of blacks, and the FEMA response was very, very, very bad, as you probably know. And then now we've done the same thing, or I think the powers that be, and I think they're international, not just the United States government, the powers that be have done the same thing by slamming a major hurricane into the New York City area, now targeting more affluent middle-class people. So I think what we're looking at is, in fact, realization of programs that have been written down by various writers and thinkers. They write a lot. So if you read a lot, you can find out what they're up to.
Sure.
And you come across terms like creative destruction by Michael Ledeen, who is one of the neocons under the Bush administration that gave us not only 9-1-1, but the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, etc. And then you read terms like cyclical collapse coming out of the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, which is in London, which is very much at the center of the world brainwashing operation. So it gets into areas that most people are not familiar with. But as a kind of a introduction, let me... And there's so many documents that that discuss these technologies.
Yeah.
This is a law that Dennis Kucinich introduced in 2001 to the 107th Congress, called H.R. 2977. Of course, it wasn't passed. But it would have banned from the U.S. from using chemtrails, plasma, electromagnetic radiation, extremely low frequency, ELF, or ultra-low frequency, ULF, energy radiation, electromagnetic, sonic, laser weapon systems, psychotronic, or other energies. Also would have banned strategic, theater, tactical, or extraterrestrial weapons. It would have banned exotic weapon systems, including weapons designed to damage space or natural ecosystems, such as the ionosphere and the upper atmosphere, or climate, weather, and tectonic systems. Tectonic systems, of course, relating to earthquakes, with the purpose of inducing damage or destruction upon a target population, a region on Earth or in space, also known as environmental warfare. It would have banned space-based weapons, including missiles, energy weapons, subatomic particle beams, information war, mood management, mind control, chemical or biological agents, electronic, psychotronic, or information weapons.
Wow.
Well, that's quite a list. And of course, these are the areas that the military has been putting an awful lot of research into. This is, different kinds of war. This is war for the 21st century. They have various names for it, but all of these technologies are out there and they're well developed. And so I think if we go back and look at records in Congress, in the House of Commons in England, we can learn what the military has, and then we can draw the conclusions when we start to look at the actual physical evidence of what has happened.
Now, in the bill that Denis Kucinich suggested there, are there references therein of the reality of these weapons that he suggested not to be used, or is this on the basis that they might be developed in the future?
Well, this is a good question. Let me answer that by saying that in 2010, both the U.S. House of Representatives and the British House of Commons introduced legislation saying we need to collaborate and control the use of geoengineering technologies. They always speak of it as if it's some kind of future development, but the reality is these things have been around for a long time. And in terms of Tesla technology, it goes back to the over 100 years, some of this stuff. But it's highly secret, and we can go through history, and we can talk about the Tangshan earthquake of 1976 in China that killed more people than any other, and all the weird things that accompanied that earthquake that killed upwards of, well, between 300,000 and 800,000 people. We can talk about the signature of what we call HARP earthquakes, or HARP-generated hurricanes, or floods in Pakistan, which result from HARP-directed energy moving the atmospheric rivers that carry enormous quantities or amounts of water vapor, and then can dump those over certain areas and create massive floods. Also, they can create drought. So these technologies have existed for a long time. There are statements by politicians and military people about them, but it's not in the mainstream media.
Indeed, it's true. Now, let's talk about how the difference between, I guess, souping up a hurricane, as you said, or maybe if they do have the capability of creating one from scratch. What I've heard is that they can kind of use the energy that's created in one and kind of piggyback on that, souping it up, as you say, putting more energy into it by also dispersing chemtrails surrounding it, meaning creating more clouds that will be part of the whole system. I'm sure there's other components to this as well, heating the atmosphere, stuff like that, and also then possibly begin to direct it. How well-versed are you when it comes to how they actually are doing this?
Well, I think you've hit the main components, which are they're spraying the chemtrails, which includes many metallic ions. The first silver iodide was used in cloud seeding, gosh, back in the 40s and 50s, and they found that they could put this stuff into the upper atmosphere, and then the silver iodide that was introduced would form condensation nuclei around which water vapor would coalesce into water droplets and then make it rain. But now it's mostly aluminum oxides, barium oxides, strontium oxides, all kinds of metallic oxides that in fact ionize the atmosphere and make it turn more into a plasma, electrical plasma, which can conduct electricity. Okay, so that's the spraying. And then the zapping is by the HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, which is in Alaska, but also in various other countries like Norway and Puerto Rico and Russia and Greenland, etc. I think there's about 20 of these ionospheric heaters around the world, HARP in Gakona, Alaska, being the largest by far, which can transmit billions of watts of energy in radio waves and extremely low frequency waves up to the ionosphere, which is also electrically charged. And then the military has figured out how to make ionospheric mirrors up there and bounce these waves back to any place on the Earth with a great deal of precision. So there's no place on the Earth, fault zones, etc., that can't be affected by these extremely powerful electromagnetic waves that are being directed invisibly. See, this is one of the reasons. This is high-tech physics. It's invisible. So most people, prefer not to think about it.
Yeah, it's like
but to answer your question about juicing up Sandy, I just watched a little video on this, and I think that that's a very good possibility that there were two regular tropical storms or that were not large enough to be hurricanes down in the Caribbean, they merged, perhaps steered into each other, and then they were, and this was, it was really late in the hurricane season, you know, and which is normally the fall and late summer. And so obviously that's where the hurricane gets its strength, is over warm water in the tropical, subtropical areas. And then it was perhaps the coalition or the coalescence of these two smaller storms into a larger one to become a hurricane. And then that thing is steered north through use of chemtrails over the storm. And this particular video showed chem dumps on the storm while it was in progress. And then, of course, the zapping is going along with the spraying, adding energy to the metallic oxides above the storm, and therefore making it more severe. And then it can be steered, apparently, also with this directed energy. So what you have is a perfect covert weapon with 100%, almost 100% deniability. You can say, oh, it's nature. Well, yes, but satellite imagery shows that nature's doing some pretty funny things nowadays, you know, not only with the hurricanes, but with the earthquakes. And I think there are some smart people out there who are monitoring these things and starting to see what's going on.
Let me briefly play the skeptic here a little bit, and because I'm going to ask you a little bit more about chem dumps. I've heard this from other people as well, that they talk about huge amounts of them, something being poured out of the plane. And one of the explanations I heard for this, anyway, and I want to get your take on that, it's that when planes need to go back to the airport, they obviously dump all the fuel that they have because they can't land with that much fuel. So if there's an emergency on the plane, for example, they need to dump the fuel out of the wings. People have filmed this out of the, you know, as a passenger and seen this. What is the potentiality that we have planes in the air that are effectively on schedule, but then because of the hurricane, they need to head back to the airport because their air flight traffic is being banned at that stage. So they dump all the fuel, and surely that could interact with it in some way as well. But what's your take on that if we take that skeptical viewpoint on that?
Well, I think it's always good to be skeptical. I mean, that's the major premise of any scientific investigation, is to say, okay, prove it. You know, I doubt it. Please show me the evidence. And anyone who wants to enter this arena is going to be challenged intellectually, because there are technologies being used that most of us don't understand. And so we have to use our common sense, and we have to try to educate ourselves about this. To answer your question, I think the way to proceed would say, okay, look, you know, both of these scenarios are possible, and let's look at the evidence, you know, and this is how you make decisions scientifically. Let's just hold back and have a few different hypotheses and then see which is borne out. So it requires a lot of observation. I personally, you know, let me just give a little background. In my reading recently, let me just tell you about my website, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I've got a website called naturalclimatechange.us, and in that I go through proving, I think, that the global warming, well, it's a hoax. It's a fraud. And I think it's coming out of the Club of Rome and the Tavistock Institute. And it's a way of trying to fool people into thinking that they are at fault for this big monster which is coming down the road, which is global warming, or maybe it's disruptive climate events or extreme climate. They have lots of different spin names for it. And, of course, right after Sandy, a lot of pundits were saying, oh, we've got this big problem of climate change, so we're going to have to change our behavior. And, you know, then you get the governor of Connecticut or something who, you know, he's a lawyer. He doesn't know anything about science. He reads what, you know, his policy buddies tell him to read. But he sounds very convincing that climate change is a big problem. It's a huge problem, so we have to change our way of life and give up fossil fuels, et cetera. Well, so in my website, naturalclimatechange.us, not only do I spend a lot of effort scientifically disproving the hypothesis of man-caused global warming, but I also have other things in there for the curious, and one of them is a PowerPoint under the heading of geoengineering that I put together the spring before last for the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. And this, the Commonwealth Club had a panel discussion on the topic of man-made climate change in the skies. That's a real broad topic. So I use that title, or playing God with the atmosphere and the earth. And that's when I really started looking at the history of this geoengineering thing. And, you know, this is stuff you don't want to tell your students.
Yeah.
Because your students just want to get a good grade and go off and have a good life. You know, they don't want to hear about, you know, all these diabolical weapons that have been used by our governments. But anyway, so it's my contention then that what we've had under, and there's lots of documents on this, a lot of them coming out of the Stanford Research Institute and various institutions that are related to the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, which is in England. Large documents calling for a climate Manhattan Project. And they'll say, typically, okay, we've got a real problem. The Earth's warming disastrously. How are we going to fix it? Number one, scenario A, we're going to cut back on fossil fuels. Well, nobody wants to do that. It costs too much money. It penalizes the world's economy. So let's look at plan B. Plan B, geoengineering. Well, we just happen to have the technology to go out and do this thing called solar radiation management. We can spray metallic oxides in the upper atmosphere and make the sky whiter. And of course, this is what the chemtrails do, which ultimately could cool the planet. I mean, I think we had a very interesting interview in June, Henrik, and it ended when you asked the question, well, do we now have the technology to change the climate?
Mm.
And of course, climate is just average weather. Certainly we have the technology to change the weather. Do we have the technology to change the climate? I hemmed and hawed and said, gee, I don't know. And I think the answer is yes, because on thinking about it, various millionaires and billionaires like Bill Gates have invested in this thing called cloud whitening. And again, the logic is, oh, the planet's overheating. Well, it's not overheating at all. In fact, it's been cooling. But there's a certain amount of lying that goes along with this. And these guys probably, and it's in some papers too, they could bring on a new ice age.
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting. Let's go back to HAARP a little bit more here. I want to discuss a little bit on what they have also on their website, Eric. They have this data index right there, and they have, I think, 10 different like scientific instruments that monitor this in different ways. They have a magnometer there, an induction magnometer, and some people I've seen go in here and basically look at this stuff and monitor and then obviously try to find evidence, if you will, for the usage of HAARP at the time when something like this goes down or happen. And I guess I wanted to ask you if you've been in there, take a look at that yourself, and if so, if you think that it's the real data even that's on there today, so we could actually go in there and go back. I know that people did this when there was one of the last big earthquakes, and as well kind of showed proof in the induction magnometer that, yep, here's an indication. I mean, I can't read this stuff. I'm not a scientist, so I wouldn't know. But the indication was that right here, this is the evidence that they were using it and doing something with HAARP right before, you know, X happened, earthquake, hurricane, something. Have you been in there and looked around on the magnometers and stuff like that?
Yeah, I have seen a number of these articles. Most recently, even this morning, I looked at an article about that same subject saying that the Fukushima earthquake and tsunami was induced by HAARP.
Right, yeah.
This would be a 9 point, and they showed the magnetometer. There's even quoting some NASA scientists saying this was HAARP-induced, you know. In fact, there's a lot of speculation on the internet, as you would hope. There's an article by a guy named Bill Ballard. He's talking about the April 11, 2012 HARP-generated 8.1 earthquake over Indonesia. And he says the telltale signs of HARP man-made quakes are, one, the usual 10-kilometer depth, sometimes, and more recently, a rash of 9.9 kilometers, and the appearance of rainbow clouds just before the quake happens.
Yeah.
And he finds these telltale signs. Now, you got to admit, if you have a rash of earthquakes at 10 kilometers, it's very unlikely that that's nature. That's kind of a telltale signal of human intervention. And all these HARP clouds also seem to be associated with these earthquakes. So, and we've had quite a rash of them, you know, the Banda Aceh earthquake, Christmas 2005, which set off that gigantic tsunami, and the Chile earthquake in Santiago, the Haiti earthquake. I was just on and on and on, these big quakes. I think it's a very, very logical hypothesis that we all should be asking ourselves, are these natural or are they human-induced? And if they're human-induced, are they induced by HARP? Yeah.
If there are many Naroas who said like that, should they not happen on the same depth? Is that what you're saying? They should logically happen on different depths. Is that how
nature Absolutely. Occurs? Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, nature is very almost apparently random in the various depths. And to have a whole rash of them within a week or a month or something like that, as we've seen in the last few years, at 10 kilometers, is highly suspicious.
You know, let me go back to 1976 again. There is a UN weather weapons treaty that also defined weather weapons at that stage. Let me read here. The term environmental modification techniques refers to any technique for changing, through the deliberate manipulation of natural processes, the dynamics, composition, or structure of the Earth, including its biota, lithosphere, hydrosphere, and atmosphere, or of outer space. This could be what they're doing then, and there would be in violation of this UN treaty that was signed in 1976.
Oh, yeah, there have been several UN treaties that have all been violated and are now being violated on a daily basis. Most recently, they had one or two years ago coming out of the Biodiversity Convention, I believe, against this kind of weapon. And they go ahead and sign it, but it doesn't make any difference.
Eric, is this the United States doing this? Is it a military program? Where should we begin to look to blame somebody for these the projects that are ongoing here?
Okay, a good question. I was kind of working up to a point before, and then it got lost. But
I think I was introducing my
website. That's what happened.
Sure.
And then my PowerPoint. And in the PowerPoint, I mentioned Project Cloverleaf, which is also known as the SHIELD Project, roughly 1994 to the present, which is a global covert military project, probably military, may have other business applications. It's a coordinated effort to block or scatter sunlight. It involves military and commercial jets, spraying of particulates into the atmosphere, creating global dimming in order to militarize the atmosphere so that it behaves as an electrified plasma, in conjunction with additional directed energy from HARP and Gwen towers, probably connected with Tesla scalar weapons. So it's international. The United States is one of a number of participating countries. I think you could look to the UN as a first guess, but it may be kind of a James Bond kind of global nefarious cabal that is above all of the world governments and the UN, and that's what I suspect, actually. And then, of course, it gets very interesting to speculate about the identity of that global cabal. But it is international. Certainly they're using the United States. Certainly they've seized control of the military and the politics of the United States. But it's not the people of the United States.
Sure, yeah, exactly. I wanted to get into the reasons and the incentives of this a little later, of course, and why they're doing this. But let's go back to Sandy again and look at how it or she then, I guess, was different than other storms that you've seen in the past. As you said, Katrina, I guess, would be one of the closest ones. As far as I know, when Sandy actually hit the New York area, it was just a Category 1 even at that stage, and it wasn't that severe, but the massive amount of water that it brought in created incredible destruction there, of course, unfortunately. But was Sandy any different than other storms, Eric?
Yeah, I think that, we have to speculate, and I haven't been studying this that carefully, but on the YouTubes that I've watched recently, there was also a series of cold fronts. See, this is coming into, November now, which is past mostly hurricane season, and into the season of the what we call extratropical cyclones or mid-latitude storm track, where you have these cold and warm fronts going across the mid-latitudes. And there was a very, very severe winter storm that may have also been spiked or juiced or it made larger, which slammed into Sandy right in the place. And, of course, when you have the very warm, moist air slamming into very, very cold, dry air, the warm, moist air is forced up. And as it's forced up, the water vapor condenses and you get copious amounts of rain. And so it could be that orchestrating a hurricane into what we call an extratropical cyclone actually produced most of the moisture or made it drop. Let me also mention that from what I've gathered just studying this nefarious cabal, they love drills, and they're very careful. And so when they do an operation, chances are they've done numbers of drills before. It is a very poorly known fact that on September 11th, 2001, while the towers were not falling so much as Judy would said, going away, they just kind of turned into dust.
Yeah.
Towers didn't collapse. They also probably were hit by directed energy weapons. But there was a very, very large hurricane, Hurricane Aaron, off the coast of Manhattan, 90 miles, Category 3 or something like that, Category 3 or 4. And Dr. Judy Wood has a website about all this, and she, I think, has done a lot of work on what brought the towers down, and she is uniquely qualified to address those questions because she's a materials science physicist with a postdoc in optical interferometry. So she begins to understand what these Tesla technologies are, that in fact free energy weapons were used, and directed energy is like a new Hiroshima. A new weapon was demonstrated to the world on 9/11, and I've got a lot about that on my website about 9/11 called 911nwo.com. So Judy Wood, in her book, How the Towers Fell, I think, she came out with recently, talks about Hurricane Aaron. She discovered it by looking at tens of thousands of photos of the Ground Zero, as it's called, and seeing in some of these satellite photos, oh, there's a hurricane. Well, that hurricane was not discussed on September 11th by the media. So, even though NOAA and NASA all record this gigantic hurricane, there was no media attention given to it. So I would speculate, and this is only speculation, that might have been a drill. Now, Judy Wood would speculate that maybe the energy of that hurricane was somehow harnessed and directed to those twin towers and turning them into dust. In fact, nanoparticles, reversing the normal laws of physics as we know, perhaps causing molecular dissociation so that the steel and the concrete just kind of explodes into tiny, tiny, tiny particles. But the proximity of Hurricane Aaron and the fact that nobody knows about it, I think is very suggestive about weather warfare.
Indeed, there's many different applications of the technology, as we've seen, and there's a number of different ways that they could use it. How about earthquakes as well, then? How would they generate this? Is it by heating the with ELF down into the earth, or how would that go about?
Yeah. Actually, this is easier to imagine. I think again, you have a HARP facility, one of these ionospheric heaters, capable of transmitting, say, a billion watts or more of energy in electromagnetic form, ELFs, extremely low frequency, up to the ionosphere, directing it back down to any fault zone on the planet. And of course, you know, the current ruling theory about how the Earth the dynamic Earth operates is the whole theory of plate tectonics and continental drift, and that we have most of the continents on plates that are kind of jostling with each other over long time spans, and the friction of the rocks near the top of the plates is overcome when the plate moves to a certain critical point. There's a certain amount of strain on the rocks at the surface. So, you know, we've now mapped the fault zones. We know where they are. We even know to some extent what the probabilities are for earthquakes in the future based on, you know, kind of calculating the past, recurrence intervals, et cetera. And of course, every time we predict, we're wrong almost. But now all we have to do is take that fault zone that we know is due, such as the LA area, for instance. We know that there's a very high probability there'll be a great quake or an 8-point in Los Angeles area, say, in the next 20, 30 years. I mean, it's very high. And so if someone wanted to produce that, they could do it with HARP. They would just turn on HARP, focus the energy, the ELFs, on that region for, I don't know, a day, two, whatever it takes, and then you have a threshold situation geomorphologically, that is to say, a little bit of energy can produce a big, big result. And so this is how earthquakes can be produced, and this has been shown on a much smaller scale in the laboratory. You know, you can do this experiment, take a big rock and put it on a slope of sand, and then get a fairly good-sized boombox, you know, playing loud rock and roll music. And direct it at the unstable rock, and it'll slide down the sand, you know. And it, you did it. I mean, you induced that that result by adding some, in this case, sound energy. Well, they have sound weapons, too. So lasers, sound weapons, all this stuff that it sounds very Buck Rogers, it's real.
And do you think, then, that part of this strategy is to make all of these catastrophes to look normal, like we're in a time right now where we have increased earth changes and radical, unprecedented activities of the planet, basically?
Yeah, and I think that the people who control this technology control the world's politics. So let's say, for instance, the Indonesian prime minister doesn't want to play ball with some new proposal from the United States or the UN or something. Well, if he doesn't play ball, there may be consequences. And I think, you know, what happened in Japan with Fukushima, that, you know, I've read various accounts that this was kind of bringing the Japanese political system under the toe and under the heel of, say, the Rothschild international financial money cartels. All the banks in the world, except for about two or three, are privately controlled central banks, owned by the Rothschild interests. And, you know, some people would say that they are the true power behind all the thrones because, you know, they control the money supply, they control the economy, they control the lifeblood of every country.
I go back to the earthquake in Iran back in 2003 in Bam, where about 26,000 people were killed. And I couldn't help to think that these things, as we know, these so-called rogue nations are being targeted in various ways all the time. And Iran has been hit many different times, and many people I've seen as well dug out the evidence that earthquake lights are seen before, and it seems to be indications that, you know, someone then is targeting these countries. What do you think about that?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And in fact, you remember under our nefarious former President George W. Bush, his Axis of Evil speech, which, of course, prepared for him by one of his neocon advisors. By the way, with dual citizenship between Israel and the United States.
That's right.
He identified the axis of evil as Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. Well, those were about the only three countries at that time that did not have Rothschild-controlled central banks. And so then the evil countries then are the ones that are out of the global control of this financial cabal, which happens to also seems to control the politics and the military. So that's where I've traced it, partly. And I think that these things are being used politically. And one evidence of that is in so many of these earthquakes, such as the one in Haiti, and various others, there just happened to be a team, like the recent Indonesia earthquake, there just happened to be a team on the ground ready to mop up, including military personnel.
Yes, exactly.
So they, just like the fact that on 911, FEMA and various organizations were doing drills, the military was doing, I don't know, 15 drills on that day. They love to have these drills go live. And like the London bombing in 7/7, that was also a drill that all of a sudden just amazingly, coincidentally went live. Well, the odds against that are probably, you know, 50 trillion to one. But this scenario keeps happening in various countries of the world. So we are dealing with a global group with global technologies. And, of course, Gordon Brown, the famous statement, you know, talking about global warming, global problems require global solutions. Well, he's saying, you know, let's give all power to the UN to control everybody's economy. Well, the UN's run by England. And England's run by the Bank of England and the City of London, which is the Jewish financial power. So it's really quite, you know, striking and actually fairly obvious once you start putting the pieces together.
It's interesting with Haiti, too, because they have a huge oil reserve. They have gold. They have other minerals that are very important for people. And, of course, at this stage, if you weaken a country like that to its knees, you're going to have then become dependent on foreign aid, other people to move in there. And I don't know how this has developed. I just know that we linked up an article about this in, it was January 2010. This is quite a while ago now, but that detailed some of the resources that was available in Haiti. And if one would go and look right now, I wouldn't be surprised to see that many foreign companies have probably gotten in there and gotten their hands on these resources and other things as well. But that remains to be proven, I guess. But this is my hunch, you know.
Well, I think that, there's a guy named Alfred Weber and a woman by the name of Lorraine Murray who have been activists in the 911 truth movement and then shifted over to the whole chemtrails thing. And, you know, it's sometimes a little hard to know who's telling the real truth. it really is. But they make, I interviewed them one time on a radio show for about 2 hours and I asked about the Haiti earthquake and Lauren Murray got right into the resources angle immediately. In other words, this is why.
Yeah.
And you look at the resources, and I think that when you're looking at warfare historically, that's a darn good place to start. Resources, wealth, control of resources, control of wealth. And, of course, now it would seem that the ruling elite has developed highly sophisticated and often very covert ways to do warfare. And it's not just, you know, Army A slamming into Army B. Now the casualties are, you know, overwhelmingly civilian. And they don't know what hit them.
Yeah.
I was driving across the country last year about this time, and I stopped through Joplin, Missouri. And there was a rash of super tornadoes there. And, you know, I teach climatology and have for years, and I know a little bit about how tornadoes work. And I can tell you what, they don't go typically 10 miles or 14 miles straight north and south, mile wide, and take out four city blocks or 14 miles, and basically level it like you saw really the leveling of the lower Ninth Ward at New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
What you have here with these environmental weapons is a way of, you know, local destruction, which is nearly complete. If you don't like a neighborhood, you can take it out. And then, of course, your friends can go and buy up the land for cheap or whatever, you know.
Do you think that that's one of the reasons why they're doing this? Let's take Katrina again in New Orleans, that they wanted to, quote-unquote, clean up this area and then be able to resell this as real estate and develop the area in a different way?
Oh, absolutely. There's a real good book by Naomi Klein called The Shock Doctrine. Perhaps you're familiar with it. The Rise of Disaster Capitalism.
Sure.
And she quotes, goes into Milton Friedman a lot, University of Chicago, and that whole school of economics, which has been very influential in this country. And their premise is, you know, you want to take control of an area, you want the money, so what you need to do is create or take advantage of some natural disaster and then redesign the local community or country or whatever along the lines that are more beneficial to you. And she gives the example of Hurricane Katrina and 911 and the coup in 1973 that was obviously orchestrated by Kissinger and Nixon for the benefit of Pepsi Cola and AT&T or whoever, you know, Anaconda Copper. The corporations whose quote-unquote business interest the United States was advancing. We always talk about, you know, it's a national security interest. Well, the national security interest is always the corporation, you know, it's not the American people.
Yeah. Well, it's a very clever way, if you think about it, the way they would do this. It's not, as you say, warfare as we think about it. They don't move in with troops anymore on the ground, as you say. They do it in a completely different way in some of the areas that they're, you know, so-called unfriendly with at this stage. Or if there are places in the world where you want to kind of, again, then quote-unquote clean up the area, and you want to get rid of people, it's an effective depopulation ploy as well. They managed to kill off some people so much that they despise, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the potential for the Tesla technology is actually quite a bit more severe than nuclear weapons. You know, Nikola Tesla supposedly said in the early 20th century that, you know, if you gave him a couple different wavelengths, really, you know, the right wavelengths, and interfered them, that he could split the earth in two. Well, you know, so that means if they want to create a 9 or a 10 point earthquake, they probably have the technology to do it.
How important are documents like weather as force multiplier, owning the weather in 2025? We're not too far away from that right now, 2025, but the question is they're far ahead even from what they propose in that document, I'd guess.
Yeah, that's a very interesting document, Henrik. It was written in 1996 by some, you know, colonel or something, or a committee of officers for the Air Force, saying, look what we could do if we wanted to. And they outlined a plan for the Air Force to use the weather as a weapon of war. And they say, here's how we can do it. And it is my suspicion that an awful lot of the funding that has come to the geoengineering weather warfare program has come through other avenues. For instance, the UN global warming hoax. Then about, you know, over $100 billion has been spent by governments of the world to quote unquote, you know, study the problem of global warming. Well, global warming is a scientific hypothesis that, you know, wouldn't stand an eighth grade science fair. I mean, it's just proven. But because the politicians don't really care about scientific truth, many of them don't care about truth at all. They care about other things, I guess. Kind of a Machiavellian notion that you have to lie to the people because the people are, you know, too unsophisticated to know. And so anyway, a lot of this money, I think a lot of the Star Wars money in the 80s disappeared into various black projects in the military, and I'm sure a lot of that was the geoengineering weather warfare. Likewise, the global warming money went into the same thing.
You know, there was a video by our friend John Cale over at Cosmic Gnostic, who is down in Charleston in South Carolina. And just days before the storm, he was filming. I'm talking about Sandy now, going back to that. There was massive amounts of chemtrails seen in the sky. I don't know how much it was. You could see the dissemination of them, but there was, like, you know how it is. They just kind of they lay the stripes down, and then they're just kind of there, and they just kind of smear out. And it was an incredible amount. And he said that usually around Halloween they actually do a lot of spraying there. But what do you think are some of the other telltale, the signs, basically, when something like this is going on? Because that to me seemed like, okay, they're trying to mess with this in some way in order to maybe steer it or increase it or whatever. It could even be a way to maybe protect an area. Potentially, let's say that there is a storm there and they could guide it. They could maybe decide, okay, let's have it not strike this area, but away at least. Something like that, right?
Yeah, and your point is well taken. Just to kind of preface this, the military did in the 1962 to the 80s, they did a project called Storm Fury, in which the military was experimenting with controlling, steering, guiding hurricanes. So again, this is not new stuff. What's new is the actual, I'd say within the last 15 years, is the application of technologies which have been around a long time. But yeah, I just looked at this YouTube of Hurricane Sandy, and lots and lots of spraying over North and South Carolina along the edge of Hurricane Sandy. And, of course, that those metallic oxides could then be, zapped with extremely low frequencies, or ELFs, from HAARP. And then, the storm can be pushed out to sea or whatever they desire. And I think that's what they desired at that point. They wanted to keep it going north. But this particular video that I looked at also pointed out, and again, it's hard to see if you're not used to seeing this stuff, what the lady was calling infrasonic undulations in the actual hurricane, which she thinks were applied by HAARP, that pushed the storm eastward.
I was Googling that term, actually, and I couldn't find any proper good reference for it, but maybe I'm wrong on that one. Undulation.
Well, I think we're dealing, all of us, it doesn't matter whether you've been teaching at a university. I mean, we're dealing with very advanced technology that most people don't know about. We're dealing with physics that is quite complicated. And we're having to try to learn as best we can. Exactly what infrasonic undulation is, I don't know. Maybe the lady was snowing us, but she says it's the application of what she calls Tesla Tech Array technology, which was able to use ELFs, radio waves, to guide and steer and aggravate the storm. And she was also pointing out things going on as far south as Venezuela, the terms the infrasound, etc. So, of course, when you have a big disaster like this, something else can go on, like when the right hand's doing this, the left hand can get away with doing something else. And that's kind of what I think happened on 911 with Hurricane Aaron. We're all looking at the TV show, the towers coming down and down and down and down, and then we never saw Hurricane Aaron,
Yeah, exactly. Good point. And again, even if, let's say, every single one isn't a manipulated event, they're certainly using it like that. They're taking the advantage of whatever it strikes to use it in just in the way that we talked about. They're not sending in proper help. They're basically letting people, be on their own when these things happen. And it's always a disaster with FEMA, no matter how much money they have. And it's always a debacle.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very sad. I think FEMA is, I can tell you a little story about FEMA. FEMA came about under Colonel Oliver North, who was one of the bagmen or point people in the Iran-Contra scandal, which was revealed in some congressional hearings back in the 80s. And, of course, all kinds of illegal, nefarious activities. The U.S. Conducting a secret war in Nicaragua, funding it with drug proceeds. They were, you know, working with the cartels in Colombia and Mexico and bringing all this crack cocaine into this country, into San Francisco, and then it gets made into crack and it fuels the crack epidemic in LA. That money goes back down to fuel and fund the illegal war in Nicaragua, which the Congress had banned, told Reagan he couldn't do it. A lot of the money came from illegal sales of weapons to Iran, of course, which is now our enemy. So, yeah. You know, you have Oliver North, you know, raising his hand in congressional testimony and lying like a, you know, son of a gun. But under Oliver North, he set up the Federal Emergency Military Authority. Okay, FEMA was the Federal Emergency Military Authority. Now, what is it, the Federal Emergency Management Authority? Well, FEMA was, not all these FEMA camps were supposed to originally be places to put left-wing dissenters or whatever, you know, undesirable types in prisons in this country in case of a crackdown by the New World Order, I think. So FEMA, its original mandate was nothing like helping people. It was like locking them up and throwing away the key, you know. And so FEMA has always been very oriented towards something which, you know, there's a cover story again and then there's the reality. So
I want to take a short break here between the segments. We're going to return with more. I want to ask you about if there's anything in your view that can be done about this. I want to talk more about FEMA, actually, and we'll get further into it from there, of course. But let's talk about your websites again, Eric. You give those out to us so people know where to go to find out more about your research. You have some great slide presentations available on the website as well on all kinds of topics.
Yeah, first of all, let me say that I never entered these websites with the idea of selling something. I'm not making any money. I'm trying to get information out, and I'm trying to get information out that I just use whatever logical skills have and accumulate information and then try to summarize it. So after 911, I started working on this website, 911nwo.com. And, of course, NWO stands for New World Order. I very quickly realized that it was a New World Order behind 911. And then the other website has to do more with my actual research and teaching at university, and it's called naturalclimatechange.us. And in that one, I go to fairly great lengths to show that climate is cyclical, that CO2 is not harmful, that CO2 is in fact beneficial, and that the climate's been cooling slightly in the last decade or so. And that we've had a natural warming since the culmination of the Little Ice Age about 1600 AD, which has resulted in sea level rising about 7 inches a year, and we're still in that same mode. So it has nothing to do with burning of fossil fuels. It has to do with longer-term natural climate cycles. And this is a subject which is very complex, and it's very easy to snow people, and of course that's a pun, but it's very easy to fool people on this subject. And I think the ruling elite has long ago adopted a strategy of throwing out so much information and disinformation that people are bewildered and then give up. So I'm just trying to help people reclaim their kind of sovereignty as knowledgeable, critical citizens who own this country. The government serves us, our Constitution says. We don't serve them. And So this is what I'm about in these two websites.
Very good. Excellent. Thank you, Eric. Stay with us. We'll proceed with more after the break. And, of course, we can link up the website so you can check it out from that. The main one, naturalclimatechange.us, has links to many of the other sites from it as well. All right. We'll return shortly. Stay with us. In Hour 2, Eric talks about heart, mind control, and the war against our body, minds, and consciousness. We cover Agenda 21 and address the quote-unquote right-wing extremist conspiracy theory accusations when discussing science and politics. Then we'll speak about the cyclical collapse of the USA and discuss other examples in history. And later we cover rumors about FEMA and we end on Israeli control of the United States. Check out redicemembers.com if you want to hear more. A membership is only €5 per month, and we have subscriptions from 3 months up to 2 years. And of course, you'll get access to everything on the website, including not only all our radio programs, but also TV episodes, films, commentaries, music, and our older webcasts and video interviews as well. Right now, we'll proceed with Eric Karlstrom in our second hour.